Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I'm back with part two of the Bloomington Pantograph from August 1st, August 2nd, and August 3rd. We'll begin on page D3 of the August 1st Pantograph with the obituaries. Douglas Mike Reeves. Douglas Mike Reeves, 71, passed away Monday, July 27, 2020, at his home in Cape Canaveral. He was formerly of Bloomington, Illinois. Mike will be laid to rest at the Cape Canaveral National Military Cemetery in Mims, Florida. Douglas Shankel. Douglas Shankel, 71, of Shirley, passed away April 21, 2020, at his residence. A celebration of life will be from 1 to 4 p.m. Friday at East Lawn Funeral Home in Bloomington. Military honors will be held at 1 p.m. Jacob Joe Schmigdahl. Jacob Joe Schmigdahl, 82, of Morton, passed away Wednesday, July 29, 2020, at Hopedale Nursing Home in Hopedale. His funeral will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday at Knapp Johnson Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Morton, with Pastor Jerry Tresek officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday and 1 hour prior to the service on Tuesday. Both at the funeral home. Burial will be at Funks Grove Cemetery in McLean. Social distancing guidelines will be observed during the visitation, and funeral service and masks are recommended. To visit Joe's video tribute or to leave condolences for the family, visit www.knappjohnson.com. From Sunday's paper, Robert W. Braun. Robert Walter Bob Braun, 71, of Bloomington, passed away suddenly Tuesday, July 28, 2020, at his residence. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Saturday at Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington, followed by a service celebrating his life at noon with the Reverend Jim Warren officiating. Directly following the service will be interment in Evergreen Memorial Cemetery in Bloomington. You can view his obituary and share your condolences and memories at www.calvertmemorial.com. Doris A. Cannon. Doris A. Cannon E. Nolan of Palatine died Monday, July 27, 2020, in Palatine. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, the funeral will be held privately. For more information, please call 847-359-8020 or visit Dolores Memorial at smithcorcoran.com. Jerry T. Morris. Jerry T. Morris, 81, of Wapella, passed away at 2:47 a.m. Friday, July 31, 2020, at his family residence. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday at Long Point Cemetery in Wapella, with Scott Marsh officiating. Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton is in charge of the arrangements. Condolences may be made at www.calvertmemorial.com. Frank W. Werber. Frank Wilhoit Werber, of Sarasota, Florida, formerly of DeKalb, passed away peacefully on July 25, 2020, in Sarasota. He was 95. Frank's ashes will be held until COVID safety allows friends and family to congregate. He will then be interred in the National Cemetery in Sarasota with military honors following a celebration of his life. Dominic Dimmer Lulini. Dominic Lulini, 86, passed away on Thursday, July 30, 2020, at Heritage Manor Healthcare in Bloomington. He was born in Lake Forest, Illinois. In order to assure the well-being of loved ones during the pandemic, a private family graveside service will be held at a later date. Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home is in charge of all the arrangements. Online condolences may be made to www.calvertmemorial.com. Arlene Ann DeFries. Arlene Ann DeFries, 78, of Minonk, passed away at 4:37 a.m. Thursday, July 30, 2020, at OSF Richard L. Owens Hospital Home in Peoria. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, August 3, 2020, at Rissman Harris Funeral Home in Minonk. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to services. At the funeral home, Pastor Randy Miller will officiate. Burial will be in Minonk Township Cemetery. Online tributes and condolences may be made at www.rissmanharrisfuneralhome.com. Michael Stephen Daubs. Michael Stephen Daubs, 77, of Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, died July 29, 2020, at home. He was formerly of Albion. A private memorial was held in Sun Prairie, and a graveside funeral service in Bloomington, Illinois, will be scheduled at a later date. Robert John Wissman. Robert John Wissman, 85, of Bloomington, passed away at 6:09 p.m. on Thursday, July 30, 2020, at Heritage Manor Nursing Home in Bloomington. A visitation will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. on Tuesday, August 4, 2020, at East Lawn Funeral Home in Bloomington. His funeral service will follow at 1 p.m., officiated by Pastor Richard Gray. For more information, please visit www.eastlawnfuneralhome.com. Lauren Edward Mick Elling. Lauren Edward Elling Mick, 89, of Bloomington, passed away Tuesday, July 28, 2020, at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center. Visitation will be Monday, August 3, 2020, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Christ Lutheran Church on Hershey, with funeral services immediately following. Burial will take place at East Lawn Memorial Gardens, followed by the funeral service. And from Monday's paper, Donald Francis Lecca. Donna Francis Lecca, Donald, that is, Francis Lecca, 75, of Normal, formerly of Holyoke, Massachusetts, passed away peacefully at 8:02 a.m. Wednesday, July 20th, at Loyola University Medical Center in Maywood. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday at St. Patrick's of Myrna Catholic Church in Bloomington, with Father Dustin Schultz officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to Mass at the church. Interment will take place at Holy Cross Cemetery in Normal. Online condolences and memories of Don may be left for his family at KeeblerBradleyRussman.com. Dennis Carter. Dennis Carter, 66, of Clinton, passed away 6 p.m. July 30, 2020, in Clinton. Services will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with Ernie Harvey Jr. officiating. Burial will be at Oak Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation will be 1 to 2 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Facial coverings are recommended at the funeral home. Online condolences may be made at www.calvertmemorialhome.com. Penelope Joanne Armstrong Quinn. Penelope Joanne Armstrong Quinn, 73, of Minonk, passed away at 6:46 a.m. Thursday, July 30, 2020, at OSF St. James Hospital in Pontiac. Graveside services will be at 1 p.m. Sunday, August 9th, at West Midway Cemetery in London Mills. Visitation will be held Saturday, August 8th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Rissman Harris Funeral Home in Monong. Arrangements are being handled by Rissman Harris Funeral Home in Monong. Online condolences may be sent to www.rissmanharrisfuneralhome.com. From Monday's paper on page E3 from the Normal Council, the headline reads, "Not the Right Proposal. Normal Council to Consider Rejecting Bike Share Program." Residents interested in a bike sharing program may have to wait longer before the opportunity returns to the Normal area. The Normal Town Council will consider rejecting a proposal Monday night for bike share services through Gotcha Mobility LLC of Charleston, South Carolina, in favor of potentially seeking a different vendor. "We decided this is not the right proposal yet for us to move forward," said Normal City Council Manager Pam Reese, adding that the town was concerned about the cost and risk associated with the proposal. Gotcha Mobility proposed a 3-year bike share program that would launch in Normal next spring with 200 bikes, according to town staff. The program would cost $300,000 annually, but Gotcha proposed seeking sponsorship and advertising to offset the cost to the town, adding that rider revenues were expected to cover a portion of that amount. Normal participated in a bike share program through Zagster, a Cambridge, Massachusetts company, from 2017 to 2019 in coordination with Illinois State University and Carl Broman Medical Center. Bike share facilities were placed at Carl Broman, the Route 66 Visitors Center, Connie Link Amphitheater in Illinois Wesleyan University, Illinois State University, and Uptown Normal. That program's estimated cost was $87,000 a year. The Advocate Broman Foundation contributed $10,000 annually for the program. A selection committee comprising town staff and representatives of Carl Broman Medical Center and Illinois State University is recommending council to reject the proposal due to the financial risk to the town of if sponsorship and advertising revenue was not raised. "Moving forward, I think there will be a point where we try to reissue a request for proposals and see what options are out there," said Reese. "We do think the bike share program was growing in popularity." And on page A3 in Monday's paper, there's the 5-question interview with Lynn Ruska of the Red Cross. "Continued service with added safety for COVID is the headline. Her name is Lynn Ruska, H-R-U-S-K-A, and she is CEO for the American Red Cross in Central and Southern Illinois region. Question 1. "Since the coronavirus pandemic hit the area, what changes have you had to make at the Red Cross?" She said we have continued to deliver all of our critical services, disaster response, blood platelet plasma collections, services to military families, and training services, CPR and first aid, but have made a number of changes to keep our volunteers and the people we serve safe. "For a disaster service, Red Cross volunteers are working remotely to talk with our clients and deliver resources in proper protective gear. For blood drives, all donors are temperature checked and screened. Everyone wears masks, beds are constantly disinfected, and we exercise social distancing and generous spacing in our setup. Like most, we have had to cancel our special events and celebration where lots of folks are gathered." Question 2, "Will you ever get back to normal, do you think, following the pandemic?" "I anticipate that many of the challenges we have made will continue to be part of our protocol, but truly look forward to where we can safely gather together. Our work is really neighbors helping neighbors, and we are missing the human contact." Question 3, "How have blood donations gone, and is it a challenge to remind people to donate in such different times?" "For all of the reasons that we know and understand, many of the businesses who hosted blood drives have had to be closed, canceling scheduled blood drives. Working hard to avoid a blood shortage, and thanks to a very supportive community, we have been able to move most of our drives to appropriate alternate spaces. It has been a bit of a roller coaster. We are so very thankful for the many donors who have helped keep a safe and adequate blood supply. New to our collections, we had begun collecting convalescent plasma for COVID-19 patients and can now tell each of our donors whether or not their blood has antibodies for COVID-19. Question 4. How about fundraising efforts? What ideas do you have or have you for implementing to help? We miss our events. This 27th annual American Red Cross Evening of Stars Gala this year, featuring country music icon Trace Adkins, was postponed because of the pandemic. The Red Cross fundraiser had been scheduled for April 29th. We are very appreciative of the steady support we receive from our sponsors and supporters. Like most, we had a lot of unplanned expenses as we add supplies, materials, and technology to keep everyone safe. And question 5, what kind of hobbies do you have and what do you like to do in your spare time away from the office? Family activities and tennis account for most of my free time. And from Monday's paper, Black Lives Matter meeting canceled due to weather. A line of showers and thunderstorms forced the cancellation of a scheduled Black Lives Matter public meeting at Bloomington's Miller Park on Sunday evening. Leaders had planned to discuss decarceration of the McLean County Jail. BLM leaders are hoping to persuade officials to eliminate bails for those charged but awaiting trials where the suspect is deemed not to be a threat. A line of thunderstorms moved through the area just prior to the scheduled start of the meeting at 6 p.m. Officials canceled the event but did not announce a makeup date. It was the last of 3 outside meetings scheduled by the group this summer. Previous meetings were also held in Miller Park. From page 1 of Monday's paper, this lovely story about the Constitution Trail Gardens, headline Variety in Bloom, written by Lenora Sabota. The gardens of Constitution Trail encourage connections within the community and beyond, while also providing beautiful distractions for those using the hiking, biking path. Several are close together on the trail segment west of Towanda Avenue, right after the trail crosses Vernon Avenue at Angela Drive. The John Wesley Powell Ottoman Garden, the Ashikaiwa Sister City Garden, and the Vladimir Canterbury Sister City Garden. On a recent day, the JWP Audubon Garden was literally buzzing with activity as bees, dragonflies, and hummingbirds zoomed from flower to flower. From the beginning, it was meant to be a demonstration garden of plants that have grown here for eons, primarily native prairie plants, said its steward, Gretchen Monty. In recent years, we went to a trend toward featuring pollinator plants that are essential to the insects and the birds. The garden was dedicated in 2018 as a memorial to Dale Birkenholz, Illinois State University Professor Emeritus, who created the garden nearly a decade ago with the John Wesley Powell Audubon Society. Another early contributor, John English, who Monty called the Johnny Appleseed of our area. At least 50 different plant species are in the garden, providing a kaleidoscope of colors at various times of year. The yellow of gray-headed cornflowers, the red of royal catchfly, and the purple of giant hyssop. We want people to not just enjoy all these interesting plants. We want them to go back to our local nurseries who are beginning to carry native plants and plant some in their own yards, said Monty. Meanwhile, just down the trail from the Audubon plot are gardens recognizing the sister city relationships Bloomington Normal has had with Ashikaiwa, Japan, Vladimir, Russia, and Canterbury, England. Patrick Dullard, president of the Friends of Constitution Trail, said these gardens and others, including those in people's yards facing the trail, reflect how the trail weaves through the fiber of the community. It's more than getting from point A to point B. In particular, the Sister Cities Gardens symbolize peace reaching out to people around the world, he said. Bobby Jones, a horticulturist for the town of Normal, said the Sister Cities Gardens are a great addition to the trail for many reasons. Not only do they provide year-round interest with flowers and foliage, they're representative of the specific types of gardens found in each country, Jones said. The Japanese garden, which includes a red torii Gate was created in 2002 to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the Sister City Friendship with Asahikawa. A tea house was added in 2012 for the 50th anniversary. A weeping cherry tree that is part of the garden is a gift from the city of Asahikawa. The Vladimir Garden includes trees such as the birch and linden that are common in Russia. Bob Hathaway, who helps take care of the garden, said nearby copper beech, chestnut, and oak trees honor ties to England, and he added red peonies are a variety called America. Meanwhile, in Bloomington, the McLean County Herb Guild maintains gardens just north of the Atwood Wayside along Robinson Street, near the intersection with Monroe Street. We make an effort to try to put things that are familiar and things that are not familiar, said Marty Siegel, a member of the guild who works on the garden. As you might expect, there is an herb garden, but also biblical, butterfly, prairie, culinary, dye, and cutting gardens. Among the more unusual plants is a balloon flower, which looks like a giant white balloon waiting to be inflated. You'll also see ground cherries, strawberry spinach, culver's root, and thistle. Gravel pathways were put in place last year with the help of Boy Scout Troop 20, said Siegel. They help separate the different gardens while allowing people to get to the center of the gardens for a closer look at the plants. Noting that gardeners find joy in growing things, Dullard said, along the trail, it brings joy not only to them, but to others. And from Saturday's page one, concerning Illinois Wesleyan University, IWU faculty seek delay in teacher cuts. Illinois Wesleyan University faculty say they want the administration to wait before sending termination letters to 9 faculty members affected by program cuts, allowing more time for faculty to be involved in restructuring course offerings. The termination letters are the result of the university board's decision in May and July to eliminate some programs, majors, and minors. The faculty handbook calls for every effort to be made to find other positions for those affected. Faculty members voted 111-13 in favor of a resolution calling for the delay after a special faculty meeting held virtually on Thursday. A total of 160 were eligible to vote. The rationale for the resolution, as presented to faculty members, called into question the administration's efforts in the wake of the program cuts. President Georgia Nugent told the faculty in an email before the meeting that the terminal contracts originally planned to be sent August 1st would be delayed until the end of August to see whether more alternatives come to light once fall semester begins August 17th. But Michael Thune, vice chair of the Council on University Programs and Policy, which presented the resolution, said Friday that a one-month extension isn't enough. What we've seen of the efforts of the administration to make every effort has not been impressive, said Thune. Nugent said one of the 9 had already decided to retire after the upcoming academic year. She said positions may have been found for 2 or 3 others. She thinks the picture will be clearer once fall semester begins. We have a large class coming in. We are considerably above our original projections for the incoming class, said Nugent, adding that the returning class of students also appears to be strong. However, she cautioned, with uncertainty about the COVID-19 pandemic, things change every day. On July 16th, the Board of Trustees voted to end majors and minors in anthropology, religious studies, and French, and the minors in Italian. In May, it cut programs in American culture studies, design, technology, and entrepreneurship, Greek and Roman studies, and international business. The cuts take effect after the upcoming academic year, and students already in those programs will be allowed to finish them. Nugent said, even without dedicated programs or majors, students will have opportunities to learn about such subjects as religion and anthropology, although we don't know what specific courses will be offered. Although not fully satisfied with the one-month delay, Thune said, it seems the administration in some ways has hurt us. He said, what happens next is for there to be continued conversation, debate, and engagement. Faculty have been working on proposals for new or restructured programs, such as an Institute for Global Learning and Leadership and a Center for Human Rights and Social Justice. And finally, from Saturday's Lifestyle Pages, the headline is Face Coverings Help in Many Ways. As health experts urge the public to wear masks to slow the spread of the coronavirus, they continue to get pushback. Among the arguments of skeptics, if masks can't fully protect me against COVID-19, what's the point? Scientists' counterargument is that masks can help reduce the severity of the disease caused by coronavirus, even if you get infected. There's now mounting evidence that silent spreaders are responsible for the majority of transmission of the coronavirus, making universal masking essential to slow the spread of the highly contagious virus, experts say. This makes the coronavirus different from the seasonal flu. With seasonal flu, peak infectiousness occurs about one day after the onset of symptoms. But with the coronavirus, even among people who do end up becoming visibly sick, peak infectiousness can occur before they show symptoms. In fact, experts say significant amounts of virus can start coming out of people's noses and mouths even when they feel well. This is a key reason they say tactics to deal with the coronavirus must be markedly different than with the seasonal flu. And the universal wearing of masks is key. Here are some basic answers to some common questions based on research and interviews with medical experts. What is the point of wearing a cloth face covering if it doesn't filter out everything? Cloth face masks still provide a major protective benefit. They filter out a majority of viral particles. As it turns out, that's pretty important. Breathing in a small amount of virus may lead to no disease or a more mild infection. But inhaling a huge amount of virus particles can result in serious disease or death. That's the argument Dr. Monica Gandhi, University of California, San Francisco professor of medicine and medical director of the HIV clinic at Zuckerberg San Francisco General Hospital, is making about why, if you do become infected with the virus, masking can still protect you from more serious disease. There is a theory that facial masking reduces the amount of virus you get exposed to and the disease severity, said Gandhi, who is also director for the Center for AIDS Research at UC San Francisco. What evidence supports this theory? The idea that a lower dose of virus means less severe illness is a well-worn idea in medicine. Even going back to 1938, there was a study showing that by giving mice a higher dose of deadly virus, the mice were more likely to get a severe disease and die. The same principle applies to humans. A study published in 2015 gave healthy volunteers varying doses of a flu virus. Those who got higher doses got sicker, with more coughing and shortness of breath, Gandhi said. Another study suggests that the reason the second wave of the 1918-1919 flu pandemic was the deadliest in U.S. was because of the overcrowded conditions in army camps as World War I wound down. In 1918, the army camps were characterized by a high number of contacts between people and by a high case fatality rate, sometimes 5 to 8 times higher than the case fatality rate among civilian communities. Finally, a study published in May found that surgical mask partitions significantly reduced the transmission of coronavirus among hamsters. And even if the hamsters protected by the mask partitions acquired the virus, they were more likely to get a very mild disease, Gandhi said. What has happened in other countries where residents masked up? The protective effects are seen in countries where masks have been universally accepted for years, such as Taiwan, Thailand, South Korea, and Singapore. They have all seen cases as they opened up, but not deaths, Gandhi said. This has been Rita Schulte reading selections from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, August 1st, Sunday, August 2nd, and Monday, August 3rd. I look forward to reading with you again very soon. Goodbye.